Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the court, Robert Little on behalf of Janglevision. I'd like to reserve 6 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor. And joining me at council table is my colleague, Dennis Loomis, and in the courtroom is the artist who created the Janglevision twins, Claudia De Roma. The purpose of copyright law is to protect and control the ownership, use, and distribution of creative and expressive works. As the district court here itself acknowledged, the Janglevision twins created by Ms. De Roma are entitled to broad copyright protection, and the court did that in its decision at ER 85 to 86. What shifted was, in applying Rentmeester, there was a deconstruction of the elements of the Janglevision twins. So when the plaintiff was taken to task for not adequately describing which of the elements of the Janglevision twins were entitled to copyright protection such that they were substantially similar to the infringing works, Wang's works, women in the martini glasses. And I think that the best way of describing what happened here, when I direct the court's attention to Exhibit 18 that was submitted by Wang, and that's at ER 256 to 261. There's a set of various images. There's Catwoman, there's Rubber Man, there's Halloween costume, generic examples of what the district court and what Wang characterized as a woman in a bodysuit wearing a mask. That is not, Your Honors, what we believe the Janglevision twins are. We believe they are imaginary characters created by the artist's vision of what the, in her words, the universal woman would look like. So if we were to take, for example, the iconic image of Mickey Mouse, and yes, Your Honor.
Let me just take you back to where we are procedurally.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the district court granted a 12b-6, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And said as a matter of law, what you've alleged in your complaint doesn't constitute, you could never prevail on a claim of the violation of the Copyright Act.
Correct, right? Your Honor.
Okay, so the district court said those allegations, you look at those allegations in the complaint and the reference, you know, all the things you can look at, properly look at on a motion to dismiss. What did you allege was the violation?
The violation was the taking of the Janglevision twins, which were submitted to the defendant Wang at the time that De Roma was applying for a job with Wang as a graphic designer.
Well, I got that.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Okay, but what about, I guess I'm trying to get at is, what did Wang, what was it about their, I don't really want to call them, but their advertisements.
Yes.
What was it about them that you contend constituted improper copying?
And Your Honor, I think there's a bullet point list, and it appears in the record at ER 66 to 67.
Is that in the complaint?
That was in the supplemental briefing.
Well, my question was directed to the complaint because the defendants were asking the district court to look at the allegations of the complaint, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
26 is all about.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so my concern is where did the district court go wrong in looking at the complaint such that it concluded as a matter of law what you've alleged doesn't constitute a violation of the copyright law? That's my only concern.
And Judge Paez, you would agree with me, Your Honor, that if we put two images together and we say these are substantially similar, and here's why.
All right. So what did you allege in the complaint about that?
That the Janglevision twins were when you take them and you put them next to the characters, the infringing characters that appear in Wang's work, they have the same skins, the same palette, the same by that I mean the color. the same shape, the elongated torso, the elongated limbs, the same facial features. And what happened was the district court looked at, well, there's these small differences. The facial coverings, there's the eye openings are different. The eye openings are different. These small differences were focused on, and what happened was when we described to the district court the various things that we thought were substantially similar, the head shape, the torso, the skin color, the number of characters, the hand positioning, all it alleged in the complaint, which, as Your Honor agrees, are taken as true at the pleading stage. What happened is the Wang then said they're trying to seek a copyright protection on heads and skins and skin color and positioning and torso. And none of these things, these body parts, are copyrightable. That was air. That is like taking an image of, for example, I was getting there, but Mickey Mouse, and saying Mickey Mouse has a tail. And so what is it about tails are not copyrightable expression? Mickey Mouse has black shorts on in the Steamboat Willie image. Black shorts aren't copyrightable, and essentially took each of the elements that we say essentially are creative composition. The collection of those elements are substantially similar. And as I put in the brief, when you look at the Surratt, for example, when you stand back and you look at it, you see a composition of many elements that come together to create a creative work. But when you get closer, during the deconstruction process of saying the tail, and here was the torso, the shape of the eyes, the skin, what happened was, by a reductive reasoning, we essentially just called them, not us, the at the suggestion of Wang, called them just women in bodysuits wearing masks. That is not what the Jangle Vision twins are. There is nothing in reality that is like the Jangle twins. And when I say that, I'm saying it's very, Exhibit 18, we see Catwoman mixed up with Rubberman and so on. These characters are distinct. And yet Wang advanced those characters as examples of what a trope it is, how commonplace it is, how stock it is for a woman in a body mask, in a bodysuit wearing a mask. And, Your Honor, that's where we think that the district court got it wrong, because as it deconstructed those elements and viewed them in isolation, then essentially there was no creative work at all, because the composition had essentially been deconstructed into its individual parts looked at in isolation, as opposed to the sum of its parts looked at as a whole.
I thought that is what Mr. required the court to do, which is to filter out the unprotectable elements. So I guess I'm not following how your argument matches up with what the law required the district court to do here.
Yes, Your Honor. Judge Thomas, absolutely, Rentmeester does lay out the correct explication of the extrinsic test. That is true. It is very, very difficult, as we argued in the brief, it is difficult to apply Rentmeester involving the photographs. I would fully agree, the extrinsic test involves looking at the elements that are not similar and looking at, in other words, the differences, and looking at the elements that are similar. And in Rentmeester, they were looking at a two-dimensional static photograph. And that photograph, the reason that's important, Your Honor, is photographs are depictions of real life. So when we look at the two photographs in Rentmeester, we're looking at identify it. A basketball hoop, the color of Michael Jordan's skin, the granjete of him as he's dunking the basket. Those things needed to be filtered out. Here, Your Honor, what I'm saying is the Jangle Vision twins in composition, there are no elements that are so commonplace that they need to be filtered out.
Well, but the idea of a figure in a latex suit or a skin-tight rubber suit, I mean, why doesn't that have to be filtered out? I mean, that's a common idea.
That's exactly what Wang said, and that's exactly, your honors identified exactly what we disagree with, that the Jangle Vision twins are simply women in latex bodysuits with masks.
What I'm trying to get at is what about them is unique. I think that the lore would require us to filter out the bodysuits, filter out the postures, filter out the openings for eyes and mouth. What's left that's protectable?
So if we did that to Mickey Mouse, if we filtered out the tail, and we filtered out the ears, and we filtered out the nose, and we filtered out the outfit, wouldn't we be left with just saying that Mickey Mouse is just a mouse? Just like in this process, if we filter out the skins, and I really do want to emphasize the composition of these elements, and I also want to say we do disagree that they are just women in a clad in latex with face masks. That having been said, but if we were to filter out those elements from Mickey Mouse, we would be just left with a mouse. It would be impossible to say this character infringes on Mickey Mouse because it has a tail, it has ears, it has a nose, and so on. And the example we gave for the Bugs Bunny example is the example of what happens when you take a static image like Bugs Bunny and then you animate it. You put it into animation. Are there going to be differences? Of course. So, for example, with respect to the Jangle Vision twins, the focus was our argument, our pleading, our allegation. The Jangle Vision twins, for example, are in a very unusual posture. That posture appears in the infringing work. Their response. Now, if you look at these different parts of this video, and there's 600 frames in the video, so in any given frame, the posture is going to change. But we identified frames in which the posture is the same. They would say, no, the posture, you can't copyright the idea of human posture. And we would say the posture itself is an expressive element of the Jangle Vision twins.
I just have one. So in your view, where the district court made an error was in the filtering process? Are you suggesting that that there's nothing here that's subject to filtering?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Okay.
But wasn't the district court doing what the law requires them to do to filter out similar things? You're saying you go to a filtering process and filter out nothing. That sounds like what you're saying.
You do filter out common elements, but what I'm saying is that the elements here are uncommon. The composition of those elements together are uncommon. I agree that we filter out common elements, like, for example, in Rentmeester, the basketball hoop, and so on. I agree that we filter those out, and at the end of Rentmeester, what we were left was just a Michael Jordan in the Grand Jeté dunking a basketball, and that was it. It wasn't entitled to copyright expression, but they were photographs, Your Honor. They weren't graphical depictions that were wholly the creation of the artist. And so I think that is the difference or the problem here is if we go, I can't, of course, we've always applied the extrinsic test in copyright throughout circuits. The problem is when we apply it in the manner in which the district court applied it here, we end up with the trope of just of much, Your Honor. Thank you.
For the defendants. Your Honors, this is an easy case to affirm. The district court judge got it right when he dismissed plaintiff's copyright infringement claim as a matter of law under the objective controlling extrinsic test because the works were in the record, they were capable of being compared. Remember, plaintiff's work is limited to a single sheet drawing two specific figures into specific outfits, into specific poses, into specific chairs against a blank white background. In contrast, defendant's works are two short linear videos. They feature martini glass-shaped pools filled with figures, different shaped, different anatomy, different expressions of gender, wearing different outfits, different backgrounds, moonlit sky, night in the background. The camera dramatically pans out and reveals that the figures in the pools are actually light sparkling on a distinctive handbag. Once the admittedly unprotectable idea of a human-like figure wearing a latex bodysuit and face mask is filtered out, and my friends already conceded below ER 350, that's an idea that has to be filtered out, is rightly filtered out. Once you filter out that idea, the protectable elements of expression here are dramatically different.
So what are the protectable elements here?
At best, plaintiff has the right to use her copyright to claim protection over the combination of the specific color of the outfits, the specific shape and location of the cutouts, the very specific pose in the specific chairs that they're in the specific setting or background, which in this case is floating in blank space.
So you seem to be saying unless it looks exactly like what they produced, it can't be protected.
It has to be substantially similar. Obviously, if you have a case with a verbatim copy-paste expression, that's not a case we'd be here arguing for a motion to dismiss.
What you just described would be something identical rather than substantially similar. Is there something substantially similar that you think would be infringing here?
It would have to be something very, very close. You'd have to have similar figures in a similar style, right? Plaintiff's work is a matte graphic comic book style, similar cutout, similar pose, similar chair. Now you can move around those different elements, take one or two things away, and we would have a harder, you know, case to bring on a motion to dismiss. It's not one factor, but the combination of factors here are all expressed dramatically differently in the Wang works. The styles are different. The outfits are different, the colors are different, the cutouts are different, the setting is different, the expression of gender, right? Wang's figures are clearly female figures. Plaintiff has touted throughout the complaint these are androgynous figures. Gender is expressed differently, the outfits are different. So, you know, in this case, there's no verbatim copy-paste expression, and what we do have as expressed is just completely different in terms of how the thing looks and then the appearance of it.
So, you know, in our case that we talk about, broad and the alleged item that was copyrighted is entitled to broad protection in some instances, in others it's entitled to thin protection. You know, we have these words. And those become important, at least in our circuit, at the intrinsic phase of the case if you get there. But let me just ask you, do you think this, their items that they're seeking protection for, are they entitled to broad protection or thin protection? You seem to be suggesting it just be sort of thin, very limited, almost identical, because there's very little variation that an alleged infringer could do to violate the protected elements.
We do believe these works are entitled to thin protection. Remember, they are fictional depictions, but they reflect human anatomy. These figures are clearly designed to be human. They're wearing outfits that are commercially available. Plaintiff didn't invent these outfits. The chairs, classic chairs, you could purchase them in a store. But either way, you skin the cat, and you know the district court gave plaintiff the benefit of the doubt. gave plaintiff the benefit of the doubt, said, you know, for purposes of the motion to dismiss, we'll grant you broad protection, just like in Rentmeester, having thin or broad protection isn't case dispositive, and it isn't case dispositive in this case, because whether we're looking at these figures for virtual identity or substantial similarity, plaintiff can't meet either standard.
So from your perspective, that's not an issue we have to really address in this case.
You could affirm and maintain a motion to dismiss-based finding of broad protection and easily dismiss for lack of substantial similarity, just like was done in Rentmeester. Your Honor, just a few quick things to note. I noted in my intro, my colleagues seem to be backtracking. My friend said, you don't have to filter out the idea of a figure in a bodysuit. That's already been conceded below ER 350. It was also reiterated in their brief. Another quick clarification, the purpose of copyright, this comes from the Constitution, Congress, the Supreme Court, and Feist. The purpose of copyright is to incentivize the creation of new things. We give authors limited monopolies. They're powerful monopolies, but they are designed to be limited to protectable elements of expression. Copyright is not designed for plaintiffs, big or small, right? This plaintiff is a small entity. Lots of plaintiffs are large ones. Copyrights are not designed to enable plaintiffs to monopolize ideas and unprotectable elements, anatomical figures. Those things have to stay in the public domain.
Okay. I don't think we have any questions for you, so unless you have other points to make, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. So had Claudia Di Roma been hired by Balenciaga or Tom Ford at Gucci or Helmut Lang and created these characters after the Wang video had hit the social media and created a blitzkrieg regarding these rhinestone-encrusted handbags, we know that these two places would be reversed. They would contend that the Janglevision twins infringe on their characters lounging around in martini glasses. I think that the distinction, I disagree with my friend on the other side, that the distinction between broad and thin copyright protection is not important here. I think Judge Collins' question, and then the panel followed up, is I do think that they are saying that these need to be identical, which does suggest that they think that the Janglevision twins are entitled to thin copyright protection. And I would agree, we cannot copyright the idea of a woman in a body mask, or a woman in a bodysuit wearing a mask. And I'm sure there are lots of Halloween costumes that depict that. But at the same time, Your Honors, we know, Your Honors know, the folks in this courtroom know, we know the difference between Catwoman and just some suit, a generic suit on Amazon. We know when we see Catwoman. There was someone else in there named Rubberman. I don't know who that is, but he looks different from these elements that are on, or these other images that were depicted that are distinct characters. Our argument is these are distinct characters. In answer to your question, Judge Paz, regarding is there anything to be filtered out, because the Janglevision twins are highly original, and the district court said as much, that they were entitled to broad copyright expression, nothing in that work, the Janglevision work, is dictated by a specific theme or subject matter. And by that I mean they aren't like unicorns, which would be thin. You know a unicorn just by the horn. They're not Tyrannosaurus Rex or dinosaurs, where you take out the elongated nose with the flash of teeth, and they're no longer, it's no longer a dinosaur. Or you take out a dolphin, you take off its fin, and it's no longer a dolphin. Those things, of course, are thin. They are limited ways of expressing it. In this case, with the Janglevision twins, there are countless, numerous ways of expressing this particular imaginary character. And because of that, we would ask ask that the district, we would ask your honors to reverse the order granting the Rule 12b-6 and with directions to enter a new and different order denying the Rule 12b-6 so that we can conduct discovery and present expert testimony that would help us at bring us to the MSJ stage. Thank you very much, for your honors, for your time and attention.
Thank you. We thank both counsel for their arguments this morning. This case is now submitted. Our court stands in recess until tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Thank you, your honors.
All right.